Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 100, for July 30th, 2008, the century mark. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by Visa. We all have things we like to think about. Online fraud shouldn't be one of them. Because with every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, our vaunted 100th episode. And I'm so glad you're here for episode 100. We had all these plans, things we were going to give away, games we were going to play, fun and games and things and nothing. We got nothing.
Except, because it's just too damn hot.
It's too damn hot. Except we do have a fabulous panel for you today, starting with that man, that muffled voice you hear in the background, Mr. Andy Iannotko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hello, Andy.
Am I really muffled?
No, you know...
It might be because, like, I'm actually back in my office for the first time in, like, 8 weeks. And to celebrate, I've got the mic stand in hedonism mode, in which I get to, I'm, like, sort of reclining on the sofa as though someone is feeding me grapes. I've got the boom mic set up so that I don't really have to move or do anything.
You know, Merlin can help us here because he's an expert on the neck talk, kind of. Merlin Mann from You Look Nice Today. You think it's because Andy's chin is on his chest or something like that?
No, I'm now adjusting the mic stand so that my chin is up, so that my chin is up, so that like the next grape is coming.
You know what? You know what it really is? It's that I don't hear birds, cafeteria sounds. It sounds like you're in a studio. Explosions. Matlock. There's no Matlock in the background. Merlin Mann is here. He's having a delicious meal of something. What is that you're chowing down on, Merlin? She's gone.
We were not able to compete with the Cherry's Jubilee that he just was having for lunch.
Let me add him back in. I don't know what happened there. He was so proud of what he was eating, and then we lost him. From This Week in Photography, the wonderful TWiP, twipphoto.com, Mr. Scott Bourne. How is your... I hear you got the D700.
I did. I got it a couple days ago.
After that heavy D3, it probably seems like just a little toy camera.
I'm calling it my walk around camera. It's my point and shoot.
Oh, shut up.
By the way, when Andy was describing his mic in hedonism mode, I kind of threw up in my mouth a little bit.
You threw up in jealousy, no doubt.
He was revolted in.
Steward, more mini Snickers. Too sweet.
Now we got Merlin, man. What were you eating, and what was it that pulled you away from us?
You can't hear this. You can't hear it on mic, though, right?
You're a little dim, fortunately, so we can't. But if you could turn yourself, not you personally.
We've got everybody listening right now hating us because you got me who's lying around in the middle of the afternoon, Scott who's got this wonderful new camera, Merlin who's enjoying something tasty. What about those horrible people in those horrible situations?
They're stuck in a cubicle. Easy, Tex. I've been making up stuff for the internet all morning and I haven't eaten. I said a lot of very slightly funny things on Twitter today, so you know I deserve a bowl of cereal. I think.
Okay? Let's let the people on Twitter decide whether you said some funny things on Twitter.
What flavor cereal are you eating? Are you consuming?
It's fail flavored. No, I'm having standard. I'm having Captain Crunch Prime.
I got it. I picked Captain Crunch Prime. Yeah, that's the unflavored. There's no Choco Cherry Berry in there. Oh.
Can I just also say that if you guys, I'm sorry, I'm trying to get my level going here. Just if you ever have a minute, though, do stop by the Captain Crunch entry on the Wikipedia. I always enjoy the discussion pages on any in-universe fictional character page, but this one's great. It's great. And the role of John Lafoot, his nemesis, a little bit about his personal background, what the captain's full name is, some problems internally with the story, with how old he was in 1963.
Well, so apparently he was old enough to have a beard. So,
what is his full name?
Oh crap! I don't know. Let me
look. That's a terrible name.
Given this is our 100th episode, folks, we have absolutely nothing about Macintosh.
It's pointed out that it does tears up the roof of your mouth,
yes,
and
that's known.
Which I think is true. There's some discussion about whether that belongs in the article. There's discussion of the fact that his eyebrows are actually on his hat.
You know what? This is going to be really controversial. This is going to be really controversial, but my favorite Captain Crunch was Avery Brooks. I think he brought something to that role that Kirk didn't really do, that Picard didn't really do. You know, it was more in
the
time.
Wrong captain, Andy. Wrong captain. Sorry.
So we thought it'd be kind of fun to do what's my line game here, because we have a very special guest in studio with us. He is a well-known software author. He is perhaps one of the most championed fellas in the Macintosh world today. And Andy Iannocco, I'm going to give you the first question.
Okay. Hang on, I have to get my blindfold on.
Oh, yeah, please.
Oh, okay.
No, you would not recognize him. I don't think he has made a lot of appearances in the public. He is known for being reclusive, private, out of the public eye.
Okay. You don't do this much, do you, Leo? I think you're giving a lot of clues away.
I am?
In the informational part.
You know that? You know what else? He just hung, hung up.
Well, that we could still ask questions. Well,
you know what's going to happen? He was going to take home a case of salad dressing from our sponsors as our guest, guest celebrity, but maybe now, you know.
You would think he would have appreciated that.
Promotion. That Nightman whose secret is that he's a champion rope trick shooter. You know, maybe we'll just have him on.
Yeah, maybe you just leave your Botany 500 suit in the dressing room.
There you go. From the Johnny Carson collection, available exclusively at Sears Retail Outlets.
All right, he's back now. Ladies, would you please ask your first question? Put your blindfold on, Andy Iannocco. Ask a question of our guest today, mystery guest.
Okay, mystery guest. This product that you are known for, would it be helpful in, say, the agriculture or agribusiness sphere?
Not yet, but given enough time, it probably would be able to take control of it, yes.
Okay.
Merlin Mann, a question for our mystery guest.
Do you have any physical deformities that could be characterized as being flipper-like?
Ooh! I think you're getting warm.
Well, I think there's some light webbing between two of my fingers, but most people wouldn't notice that.
Leo, is it Don Rickles?
No, I'm sorry. $10 to our guest, and we go now to Scott Peggy Carlisle Bourne.
I was just going to say, I have been channeling. I'm working with Vontra here in the studio. Vontra is a well-known Cygate. Vontra is now channeling Kitty Carlisle for me. I'm asking Kitty for a question, and her question is this. Does the person's profession have anything to do with making those giant bugle horns people blow at ball games?
Very close.
I would say no, but I'm sure that some of them have been produced with our company's logo on it at some point.
And that's the key, ladies and gentlemen. That's the key.
Thank you, Kitty. Wherever you are, miss you.
I'm going to turn over all the cards here, folks, and give the $10 to our mystery guest. He has stumped you all. Unless anybody has a guess, Don Rickles is not the guest. Any other guesses before I turn over all the cards?
It's not Charlie Callis.
No, it is not. Nicholas Jitkoff is with us. He is Alcor, the creator of perhaps the single most incredibly valuable, useful Macintosh program of all time, the perennial free software winner. Mr. Alcor is a creator of Quicksilver, of course, and he now has done a number of things for his current employer, Google, including, I understand, the Google app for the iPhone, which we've already, I think, has been a pick on MacBreak Weekly as being incredibly useful.
It was my pick.
Yeah, because it's a location-based search. Nicholas, it's so good to have you. We're big fans.
It's good to be here, finally.
Finally. Oh, I think Alex Lindsay now wants to get into the game. Don't tell him who our guest is. Surprise him. Surprise him. Let's see if he'll know.
Wait, I'm channeling Bennett Cerf. He says, pools of fire, blood of the goat, pools of... Oh, God, Bennett must have really screwed... Oh,
he went the wrong way.
Sympathy, Bennett. I don't know what he was into, but it must have been freaky, man.
Alex Lindsay, are you there?
I am.
All right. You've just missed our What's My Line game. We introduced Nicholas Jitkoff, who is, of course, Alcor. Do you still use the name Alcor, Nicholas?
As a user ID, yeah.
Yeah. Where does that come from?
It's the name of a star in the Big Dipper, or next to the Big Dipper.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, yeah, but that's not why it's famous.
Why is it famous?
Isn't it the company that froze? It's the company that froze. What was it? Ted Williams? No, who'd they freeze? They froze somebody's head.
Oh, that's
right.
They're a head freezing company.
Oh no! You're
inconveniently
thinking of
that's also the case.
You think of Alcoa. He was wrapped in Reynolds Wrap.
That was Walt Disney. In any event,
Alcor Life Extension Foundation.
How old were you when you first wrote Quicksilver? Because you seem like you're a pretty young guy, unless you're very youthful looking.
2000, so 21.
Okay. So you are youthful looking, but that you were still in college when you wrote that.
Yeah, the one that's released is right after college.
Yeah,
around that.
You did something recently. I think it was pretty interesting. You've kind of given Quicksilver away.
Well, and that's partly due to my inability to spend time on it.
Right.
Like making something open source is one of the few ways you can get more input from other people.
I think huge, though. I think a really significant thing. How has that gone? Have people jumped on and become part of the team? And
yeah, there's a lot of people who are really interested in helping. The main problem is trying to figure out how to organize them so that it's not forked into a bunch of different versions.
Right. Has it forked?
There's a few people working on variants of it, but we're trying to sort of coalesce everything into another release that we'll do.
One thing I always wanted to ask you is are you a graphics designer? Because one thing I always liked about Quicksilver is how beautiful it was and just how elegant it is. And it feels like, did you hire somebody to help you with that, or did you do that yourself?
No, I did that. I work as a designer.
I was going to say, because even Black Tree is gorgeous.
Thank you.
So you're a designer as well as a programmer.
Yes.
And so your chief work at Google is which?
As a designer who uses programming to illustrate ideas.
Oh, interesting. What was your major? Were you a CS major?
CS major, but minored effectively in art.
Oh, wow. That's a nice combination. I think rare, too.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It's helpful because it makes it easier to make something compelling.
Yeah, it's what stops me. Everything I do looks ugly. So it's like, okay, I can't do a good icon to save my life. So, and Quicksilver's always been very pretty. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing at Google.
So generally I work on sort of mobile and desktop applications, but I'm focused on user experience for that. And, just always thinking about ways of getting people to their information faster or to whatever they're looking for.
That's kind of your charter there. That's what they brought you on for.
Yes.
That's neat. Good.
And I started on the Mac team, but tend to branch out to a bunch of other projects.
You've worked on a lot. I was looking at your page at Google Code and you were on about 10 or 11 different projects.
Well, most of those are personal, but yeah.
Yeah. Really? All of them. Wow. Wow. So what is your favorite right now?
My favorite project?
Can you pick one, or is that too hard to do?
Wildcard is my favorite, but it's not really ready for release.
Okay.
Think generic whiteboarding, game playing, core animation for the phone and desktop.
I'll take two.
If I do that, my brain will melt, just so you know.
I think you need to add the suffix for productivity and connectivity, scalable across enterprise.
And you're set.
That'll get people reading for their venture capital checkbooks.
Hey, Nicholas, are you still working on Discipline? Is that just a personal project, or did you ever do anything to release that? Yeah, I mentioned it because, you know, as the 43 Folders guy, I think people would be interested in knowing about Discipline.
So Discipline was an app that I made a while back that basically was intended to keep you on track constantly. Like every 5 minutes or so, there'd be a whip crack sound and it'd ask you what you were doing and admonish you if you weren't accomplishing your task.
You're kidding.
It's fantastic. It totally worked.
for somebody like you, Merlin, that's a must.
No, totally. And you've got to tell it. Like, so it goes, hey, are you doing that thing you said? Like earlier today, you said you wanted to work on this thing. Wow. And then it goes, whoosh, and you go, and then you have to enter in like what you're doing, whether it's the thing that you were supposed to be doing. So basically, effectively, you create a log for where, you know, if you got off track, you were doing. Which, so there's obviously a comedy kind of component, and there's a mindfulness component, but there's also kind of a really, if you're trying to track down where your attention is leaking, it's one way to see patterns as they emerge. I thought it was a really neat app.
Is that because you need something like that, Nicholas? Is that why you wrote that?
Somewhat. I'm very scatterbrained. It helps, though, with having multiple projects, and I can just jump from one to the other as the next one becomes interesting.
Don't let me monopolize Nicholas, by the way, guys, if you've got a question for him.
I have a question. I've been a fan of Quicksilver for... Quicksilver is literally one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons that I started 43 Folders. For no other reason than people were really tired of me telling them about this program and making them watch it. Of course, then it became like a magic trick, and they were like, oh my God, I have to go use this.
Yeah.
But I've been with this for a long time. I've got a build of it that's not broken yet, despite some, you know, updates, and I keep kind of waiting for the day when the build that I have breaks. And I guess I'm just curious if you know, I had a post about this not long ago, but I'm aware that there's kind of a primary fork that some folks are working on, and there's a secondary fork where the one guy mostly went in and cleaned up the code. Is that a kind of superficial two major parts of the fork right now?
Yeah, the main thing is that there's a version of the fork that is sort of very stripped down, like a light version. Mm-hmm. An attempt to sort of make things lower profile, like there's no triggers, things like that. And they're usually committing the changes back into the main code.
Yeah, I mean, as people who are dependent on Quicksilver, I'd hate to see it.
Well, that's why I was wondering. Stuff for me, I think I'm probably, and probably Leo, I suspect we're, even amongst power users, we're probably, I know I'm pretty rare in that I use almost everything in Quicksilver. It's one of the few applications. Yeah. It's ironic given that it does so much. I mean, Photoshop, I open up and I hit unsharp mask and I close it. But Quicksilver, I really use.
You mean you don't have a trigger for that yet?
I have triggers for almost everything, including drag triggers. I have stuff where I can drop it to a corner and it goes to transmit. I mean, you know, people who have found it, and this is not in any way a slam against Butler or LaunchBar because they're fantastic, but the people who have been able to easily switch to those apps, which are great apps, have been able to do so because they really hadn't gotten addicted to the you know, it's almost like if you were somebody who used the shell a lot and then somebody came along with a GUI, there's two ways you could go. You're either the guy who says, actually, you know, GUI is going to help me do this, or you go, you know what, I really need to stay here because there's more I can do here. And so as somebody who has all that stuff going on and knowing that Quicksilver can do so many things, do you have any sense of the main kind of trunk crowd? Like what's the focus of what they see this app doing? Because I could very much see this forking in a million directions.
Well, my main goals are to keep it fairly simple. Like, I think triggers are a bit of a distraction from what the core app does. Like, they happen to be together, but it's almost a completely different app's worth of functionality. And I think that branching those off into like a separate mechanism that's always running, and you can sort of trust that your triggers will work independent of the search app, is a reasonable thing to do. The question is when and who will do those things.
So it'd be some kind of like an API or something like that would get access to the app and it would be cached or something like that.
Yeah, well, they would be tied to each other somehow. Okay. Main thing is, though, I wouldn't worry too much about it becoming obsolete, just because Snow Leopard potentially won't change that much about the OS, and these things are likely to keep working for the next few years.
You know, there were so many Mac hacks, like Hacksies, that used kind of undocumented and in some cases deprecated hooks into the operating system, and Apple always said, these things aren't going to work. So you're saying Quicksilver has been careful to follow the API and the guidelines that Apple provides? Or do you hook into some
stuff about that?
You know, do you hook, because it seems like you're doing some serious voodoo under there. Well, for instance, when Apple abandoned the input manager, did that screw things up?
No. Well, it's standalone, so it doesn't have to worry too much about poking into other processes. But
okay,
there's a little bit in there that's questionable, but it seems to work.
It's not, you know, illegal to do that. In fact, I remember talking to Apple and they said, well, you know, don't depend too much on these Hacksies, because in the next version of the operating system, they may not work anymore. And these companies are always scrambling to update it. I guess now that it's open source, it's not like you're high. People can look at the source code. Isn't that right, Nicholas?
Yep. They could fix things if they want. I have a few friends who've changed a few things that they've always hated about it. I'm happy to let them do so.
Really? So, this is the thing. I can see what Merlin's worried about. This is the thing. We've trusted you. We've put this, our life is in your has been in your hands.
This is what you get for helping people. you get the unbearable burden of our affection.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't want it to change too much, you know. On the other hand, if there's more functionality, we can live with that. We're happy with that. This is one thing I think that people, and Merlin, you actually did Nicholas a good big favor. You're a great programmer, you're a great graphic artist. Documentation, not your forte. And I think a lot of people came to Quicksilver and, you know, immediately grokked the idea of you press, you know, control space and you type a few things, but that was about it. And it wasn't until you came along and Merlin said, whoa, look, you could do this and this and this, that I understood it.
I unfairly get a lot of credit for that. I mean, I was definitely an enthusiast, but I'm not a technologist on any level. I mean, I was just an excited super user, really. But then, I'm forgetting the guy's name, Nicholas, he should help me, but there's one dude who, like, really threw down and, like, put together a full-on, like, manual for Quicksilver that not only walks you through the setup, which can be kind of a pain in the butt, but all of the stuff that you can do. And I think last time I looked, it was a good piece of documentation.
Oh, yeah. Howard Mellon made a manual for it.
It's very well done. And I'll tell you the truth. This is something I've never said publicly before, but I pitched, I think you know this, Nicholas, but I had pitched a Quicksilver book to O'Reilly at one point. This is the thing I really want to write. I was like, this
that
application.
That would have been great.
Yeah, well, I wanted to write like one of those little quick guides, you know, the little the skinny books. And you know, I think the feeling was there's probably not enough interest in this. And well, no, it could be. I mean, I don't know. Who can say?
Show of hands. Anybody here on the panel not use Quicksilver, to use Butler or something or nothing? Scott Bourne, you're the most Luddite of them all. Do you use Quicksilver?
I'm the most likely candidate to not use this, and I don't. I have several people in my staff that do and enjoy it, and I look at their screens, and it always baffles me when I walk up there and there's like nothing, absolutely nothing on the screen.
Oh, you're an icon on the desktop kind of guy. Yeah.
I not only that, I'm like pretty much every file I've ever created since 1992 is on my desktop. I have like 6 monitors because I have to keep buying monitors for the desktop icons.
Yeah.
Now I'm afraid that I don't know
how to do it organized. Sorry, Alex. I just don't know how to be organized like everybody else. Go ahead.
All I was going to say is I don't use it only because I have a lot of, I use a lot of different computers, and I'm always afraid that I'm going to get used to something that isn't there. We have a couple guys here that use it a lot, and the big challenge is they get really, really, you know, it's this environment that they get really used to, and then they move to another computer, and suddenly you constantly see them trying to figure out how to interact with the operating system again because
it's funny to watch, because if you sit down at a Windows machine, or for that matter sit down on another Mac, you might as well be wearing boxing gloves. They start just banging on the keyboard and because the bezel doesn't pop up. And
exactly. And there's
for a long time I was doing that with Unison. I was using Unison to sync my preferences. Is there any chance at some point in the future, I didn't mean to hijack your question, Leo, but out of curiosity, is there any way, any chance you think at some point in the future, Nicholas, it might be possible to wind up all that stuff under a preferences area where it might be portable via mobile me?
I'm not going to make any promises about features. I'm sure somebody will do it if it's important enough to them.
Is it theoretically possible to do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
I've made attempts. It just was hard, so I didn't ever follow through.
Is this stuff stored in an XML file, or is it a binary file?
There's a few XML files that if you got them onto the other machine.
So they're just plists. They're just plists.
But it would be like the thing is, it would become like a dot profile, you know, that you would have portable with you. And I mean, stuff like that, like when you add something to the shelf, you know, I know not that many people, I guess, use the shelf. I constantly use the shelf and the clipboard. I mean, I've got 250 items in my clipboard. So, you know, it would be nice to have that portable across. But I'm sorry, Leo, you were asking a question.
No, I think that's fine. I take it that Alex and Scott are outliers, because I know I use Quicksilver. You use Quicksilver, Merlin, and Andy. Do you use Quicksilver? Do you use Butler? Do you use something else?
I don't use Quicksilver. I don't use Butler. I don't use anything else.
Really? This is why we have work to do, Merlin.
well, no, this is why, like, the three of the guys who actually get stuff done, you know, maybe this could just be like a carnival ride for us.
There are a couple of things. Number one, Alex has exactly my point of view in that I like utilities that make me work faster and better. But the thing is, and even just within my own personal office, inevitably I'll set something up on the MacBook that then, oh God, that means I got to set this up on the iMac too to duplicate it. Oh God, now I got to get the script running on the tower and that sort of thing. Chiefly, I don't want to get into a mode where I get so dependent on a third party utility that it becomes really difficult for me to work without it. But the big thing is that I'm constantly downloading software and I'm constantly installing it and constantly thinking, okay, let's just check this out and see how it works. And I'm not going to make this into a value judgment on the software. The ones that really work for me, I don't really have to remind myself to use it. I just start using it and then start, gee, this is really great. There's a better way to use it. Oh God, there is a great feature for this. And I just never had that moment with QuickSilver. I installed it, I tried it, and then I just didn't use it beyond the first couple hours.
See, that's the thing. It's the first thing. If I go near a Mac, I just install it.
I think you'll hear a lot of people say that, Leo, and I think it's for good reason. It's a very opaque application.
Yeah.
And it's like, so, I mean, like, but in fairness, I mean, not, don't mean to sound defensive, but it's kind of like sitting somebody down at the terminal and going, start typing.
Yeah.
You know, like eventually, you know, in a couple of years, you'll figure out that there's commands that do things. But if you don't have somebody say to you, okay, here's how a pipe works. And you go, oh, I get it.
Right.
This is why people sit here and use this. And I think that's absolutely not transparent. With QuickSilver.
And I will say there's guys here in the office that are just religious about it. I mean, they just, you know, people who use it a lot are generally religious about QuickSilver. I mean, that's what, I mean, they just love, it's like, oh, it's almost like a people who
it's a
use
cult.
A Mac.
It's a cult.
Well, people who use a Mac are that way, you know? And
or,
so it's just like,
I think Merlin, you made exactly the right analogy. It's like the terminal. It's like the command line. If you're a command line whiz, that's it. And if you don't like the command line, you don't like the command line. You just don't use it.
Yeah, if you get in the habit of, I mean, again, I'm not saying anybody should or shouldn't use it. Everybody's got their own reasons. But for me, like now, using the Finder feels like a play about computers rather than using a computer. Yeah.
Nicholas, you use QuickSilver, don't you?
Yes.
I thought I should ask. It'd be kind of funny if you didn't. You've been doing some neat stuff. Scott Bourne, as I mentioned, picked the Google app for the iPhone as his pick. It's not what I thought it was. I was expecting kind of the Google. There's a Google mobile app for BlackBerry and so forth that just links to other Google apps. This is basically a Google search engine that knows where you are and gives you. And it's really slick. I think that's how hard was that to do? Is that an unusually difficult thing to do, or was it fairly easy to develop for the phone?
It was pretty easy here, just because we our Mac team had put together so much shared code that when we actually started to do phone development, we were able to carry most of it over.
Oh, that's good.
And
so the Cocoa stuff you'd already done worked.
Yeah. So using the work that others had done, it was just me and an engineer working together with a few other people helping out periodically, and we're able to throw it together in a couple months.
That's cool. And how hard is it to work with the location API? Because it strikes me that's where a lot of these applications, maybe it's a phone issue, crash.
There's not much.
It's just
Apple
a call.
Has done their best to make things really easy to get at.
And so it's just a call.
Location. Yeah.
It's like, where am I?
Well, like Apple has all those libraries, core location, core data, and really they're wrapping functionality so that developers can take advantage of them.
Right. So really, if there are issues, it's not the developers, unless they're doing something really weird. It's probably something in the core location. Because that's where
on the app too. It's hard to tell where an app is crashing.
Yeah, you're right. They mostly seem to crash when they're asking for the location to me. Although I have a fix, and we're going to talk about this a little later. I'm on my third iPhone restore, and I finally found, somebody told me something that really helped. And I think I found, well, I'll tell you now. And actually, I'll run it by you, Nicholas, to see if it makes sense to you. I literally have had to restore this three times. I've gotten to the point where just the white Apple shows, and no matter how many times I reset it, I can't get it to boot up. Have to do a
Before you say anything, can I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess it has something to do with downloading stuff through the App Store instead of through iTunes.
You're exactly right.
Yep, we had the same problem.
So when I stopped installing and updating applications from the phone and only did that from iTunes and then let it sync to the phone, all my troubles went away.
Same thing happened to me.
All my troubles went away.
This is a really important tip. So the three of us have had that result. Furthermore, when an application does crash, I'll turn the phone off. I won't reset. I'll turn it off and turn it back on, and that almost always fixes that. So I think, knock on wood, that may have solved these restore problems. So there's, Nicholas, do you have any insight into why that would be?
Honestly, I can't really say. I don't know how Apple's handling things behind the scenes.
It seems like incomplete installs. I've seen updates stall out.
I think what you're missing here, Leo, is what Craig Hockenberry calls the effing NDA.
The effing NDA. This has been a real sore spot. Apple said on July 11th the NDA would change and that developers could talk to one another, and they didn't withdraw it. So it meant that all of a sudden, you're not in a normal development environment. It's normal for developers, people like Hockenberry, who writes Twitterific, to talk to Daniel Jacquot, who writes Mars Edit, and say, "Hey, you know, how are you solving this problem? Are you seeing a bug here?" This kind of conversation makes applications better. Nicholas, do you feel? Don't go any farther than you feel comfortable. But do you feel like this is a tie in your hands?
Well, I think that the only part that's problematic is that doing a search online to try to find information about how to do something doesn't turn up any information.
Yeah, because nobody can share any information.
Right. And usually what I'm mostly looking for is chunks of code that will accomplish the same task. And if you're not able to do that, you have to rely only on the internal documentation and the few people around you can talk to.
This portion of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by the good folks at Visa. With every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. When you're online shopping for your internet pants, you shouldn't have to worry about khaki or beige. I mean, you should have to worry about that. That's what you should be worried about. You know, how big the waist size should be. Not if it's safe to buy them online. And it is safe as long as you're using your Visa. You don't have to worry about online fraud. All purchases you make are safe and secure with Visa. They use real-time fraud monitoring, very sophisticated software to identify and respond to the bad guys, catch them in the act. Most important part, zero liability. You are not liable for unauthorized purchases. That is peace of mind. Safe, secure, Visa. Visa, we thank you so much for making it possible to do our 100th episode of Mac Break Weekly. Now, back to the conversation with Nicholas. Nicholas, what is your platform of choice for developing? Do you use a Mac mostly?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Almost exclusively.
Nobody at Google saying, would you like to work on Vista, please?
No, they're fairly mean about whatever I
do. I'm sure they don't care.
Since what I'm doing mostly is prototyping, it doesn't really matter what platform it's on.
They're a Python house. Do you use Python there?
I use App Engine a lot just for back-end stuff that I'm playing with.
And that's Python.
Just because, yeah, it is. And I only learned enough of it to be dangerous, and I've been reasonably happy.
Your preferred language, Objective-C, or...?
Yeah, definitely. It's the only one I'm remotely good at.
Remotely is, well, I think you're pretty darn good at it. It's the amazing voodoo that you do with Quicksilver is pretty impressive. Pretty amazing. And then the thing is, it's fast. It doesn't get in the way. It just does the job and the hooks you must have in there. You must, I guess, writing something like Quicksilver requires understanding the API inside and out.
That was one of the nice things about it, though, that since it basically has tentacles into every app, I got to play with every API that was available on the platform.
Jeez. That's a lot. I remember when I first got my toolbox documentation many, many moons ago, back with System 7 probably. It was a good 6 feet worth of notebooks. There was a lot.
Well, it's gotten easier since then.
Maybe it's a little more straightforward. That was back when it was in Pascal. A lot has changed since then. So that's interesting that Scott and Nicholas and I all have three have this experience that if you don't install apps on the iPhone, this is, I think, probably a very important tip. Only install from iTunes. Things seem to run much, much better. And no individual apps seem to have trouble, although many of them have been updated now, which is good. I got an email from a guy saying... I'm not going to listen to your shows anymore, and I'm withdrawing my subscription because you haven't answered my email.
Right.
And, I thought this was a community, and I don't really feel like it's a community, so.
Way to go, Leo. Classy. You know what I kept finding too was, I kept reading the newspaper, but it never read me.
Yeah. You know?
You know, and I'm like, so what's the deal? I can't leave a comment here. I have a thing too that I do. And, you know, I'd let people know what kind of sandwich I'm enjoying. You know, and if the New York Times doesn't have time to keep up with that, well, maybe I don't want to participate in that community.
But we are trying to say, hey, we're something a little different than mainstream media. We're interactive. So I understand a little bit the feeling that way.
Yeah, still, Leo, I mean, you really should just add one simple line to the Twit Terms of Service. You know, Section 3, Paragraph 3-8, warning, Twit does not love you.
Well, that, apparently this guy felt that way. And by the way, he works for a fairly major media company. I'm not going to say the name, but... He works
for... Well, it sounds like with that level of maturity, he's going to be going places.
I'm disappointed you haven't responded to any of my correspondence. Because of this, Twit has lost the community ingredient to me. You're still...
Okay, but here's the deal. Email is not community, dude. Like, if you want to talk about something, do it in a public forum, and I'll respond in a way that everybody can enjoy it and participate. But, like, you, just because you think you know me doesn't mean you get to sit in my house when you feel like
it. He says, I have lost faith in your ability to communicate with your audience on a personal level.
that scales really well. That,
you know, each and every one of you, I love each and every one of you, and please send me email, because I would love nothing more than have a long correspondence with you, but I just don't have time. I guess that's the problem. Twit does love you,
and you know, from people who,
you know,
have
if
stuff,
you put, if I, you if you put that on a t-shirt, I bet you would sell at least a couple hundred. Warning, Twit does not love you.
If you think that Twit loves you for warning, more than 4 hours.
Or even better, warning, the internet does not love you. It is me.
The internet does not love me?
And, you know, I know that this sounds like a jerky thing to say, and I apologize if that offends anybody, but I think that, you know, I'll tell you what bugs me. It bugs me when I've worked really, really hard to protect my attention. And it's something that I struggle with, and it's something that I'm really trying to work on. And it really galls me when somebody tells me what my attention is worth based on what they think theirs is worth. And I think that's downright offensive.
Nicholas, you know, you kept a very low profile for a long time. In fact, you still do, kind of. Is that one of the reasons?
Not really. It's mostly... most of it comes from the reason I didn't provide documentation. That support does take a lot of time, and being easy to do access makes it
same thing.
Easier to ask questions.
It is the same.
So
thing.
You, yes,
it
scare
is the
off
same.
You scare yeah. off the people. You scare off the people who would be basically asking for documentation, right?
Or just how to do something.
And super users like Merlin come along, and then everybody starts asking them, which is very convenient.
Yeah. No, I think people, and I understand this, people feel like you owe them an explanation. You owe me an explanation.
This happened to Ethan with Kinkless. Ethan, nobody understands. Like, people are like, oh, I downloaded Kinkless and I'm not getting support. It's like, you understand this guy is like a photographer in Hong Kong with a kid. You understand that, right? Like, he's not some guy who's pocketing any money out of this. Right. He's doing you a favor and now you're mad.
Yeah. It's a, you know, the internet is a big place. And as anybody who's ever worked in retail knows, once you start dealing with the public, that they're most, you know, 99% of everybody is great, or just like us. And it's just the 1% or 2% that can really make you crazy. Don't you think it's a small minority, Merlin? I don't think it's a big...
Oh, I do. And I do. But I just want to underscore the idea that I think it's one thing to say, like, for example, one thing we haven't mentioned is that last time I checked, Blacktree had a pretty lively forum where anybody who wanted to exchange ideas or get help could go in there and find a community of people who would gather around them and do everything they could, you know, to give them respect and help them with something. And I think that's fantastic. That's what stuff like Get Satisfaction, my friend Lane has this company, Get Satisfaction, where like you can kind of crowdsource support. And I think stuff like that's terrific. I think what doesn't scale and what's hard is demanding repeated one-on-one access with any person on an issue that could be treated in a non-one-on-one way. Do you know what I mean? And Scoble's talked about this. It just doesn't scale to answer every single email about stuff that's already out there someplace. And
The forums are nice too, because people will get tired of providing support and they'll eventually sort of drop off, but then new people will come and replace them.
There's
so you have this constant.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like developing for the iPhone, Nicholas? Is it a nice platform?
It's wonderful.
That's good news. You want to hear that, because that means people
using
will
Xcode
do it.
Is what makes it great. Like you already know all the tools, and it's easy to move over.
John Carmack, the guy who wrote Doom, said he's going to do a graphical tour de force. He's excited. I think game designers must be very excited. It's a great gaming platform.
Oh yeah.
He says it's like a PS2 or an Xbox, and he really thinks you could do an amazing first person shooter or very deep MMO.
I think the most valuable thing in it, though, is the multi-touch and maybe the location-based stuff. But the multi-touch is so far beyond what anything else has been able to do so far that there's possibilities that people haven't even come up with.
I've been playing with an application, Jamd, which is really, it's People Magazine. But it uses the multi-touch very much more like that Carnegie Mellon demonstration, whoever it was that did that demonstration for TED. I mean, one of the articles is Movie Star Feet. Right, it's all these shoes. So it gives you a stack of photos, a stack, and you can flick the photos away. You can size them. You can turn them. All of this with multi-touch. I mean, this capability is built into the phone beautifully. I think people are just starting to use it, really. What would you like to see? Do you have some ideas for how you could use it, Nicholas?
Well, that's mostly what I'm trying to explore. Like, Wildcard is deliberately for trying to see what multi-touch can do,
right,
just as a toy.
Right.
I don't even know what to think of. I think that the multi-touch becomes very interesting when you have multiple participants working together. The main problem with the iPhone is it's such a small form factor that you can't do that much. Like, you can maybe wedge two or three fingers in there, but you can't get double-handed Minority Report fun stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Although, I have to say, have you played with Jamd and the interface?
With what? Oh, no, I haven't yet.
Oh, you got to take a look, because this is the first app I've seen that really uses more than just the pinch. It allows you to rotate, and it allows you the flick to send stuff off to the side. I mean, yeah, it's not Minority Report, but it's getting close. It's something you would never download because it's basically like People Magazine. Unless you really like Movie Star's Feet. You can really zoom in. What is your favorite app, besides the apps that you've done so far, Nicholas? What is your favorite iPhone app?
On the phone? I can't remember what it is, the movie app.
Is it One Tap, the movie app? There are different movie apps.
Box Office is the one I've been using the most.
Box Office. I've been looking for a good movie app. I
constantly go to Rotten Tomatoes to look for movies and then go to Showtimes, and this just does both.
That's right. It uses Rotten Tomatoes. People really like iWant, simply named, and it's just, you know, it gives you a bunch of icons for, you know, restaurants, movies, coffee, whatever. iWant is pretty cool, but it's very simple. It's free. What is the most you can charge for an iPhone app, you think?
Isn't there one that's hundreds of dollars?
Yeah, there are some expensive ones.
Yeah, there's one that's like $450.
Really?
It's like a sales contacts sort of front end.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
So for the cost of two and a quarter iPhones.
I think $10, unless the program is really exceptional. 10 is kind of the limit. What's your favorite, besides Quicksilver, what applications do you like on the Mac, Nicholas?
I don't really use anything that Apple or I haven't written.
Really?
Other than Fuzzy Clock, which I always love.
I like Fuzzy Clock. Fuzzy Clock puts a clock in your menu bar that says, it's like almost two. Five-ish. A little less.
So, that's funny that you like that, Nicholas, because I've tried to evangelize that with a bunch of folks. Matt Howey told me about it originally, and he was like, you know what, you're going to try this, and you're not going to like it for a couple days, maybe even like a week. He's like, but stick with it. And I was like, I tried it, I put it up there, and I was already annoyed. Like the first time that it said, a little after five, I was like, this is so stupid. But it's funny, because like Quicksilver, it becomes so much more enjoyable when you live with it for a while. And then pretty soon you're like, oh my God, I just realized like how little exactness I need in a clock as long as I have alarms.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, humans don't think in terms of 12:01 and 15 seconds. That's not a normal way of thinking.
Right.
This portion of Mac Break Weekly, as always, brought to you by audible.com. It's where we go to download our audiobooks. Love those audiobooks. Tell you what a lifesaver it is for me to be able to download a book and have it within minutes playing on my iPhone or my iPod, or I could burn CDs, play it on the computer. In fact, it plays on almost any portable device, even the Kindle of all things. 50,000 titles, not just books, radio shows, lectures, all sorts of great stuff. I highly encourage you to check it out. AUDIBLE.com, Audible. Like, get it? They're audio books. They're audible. You can hear them. And incidentally, we have a special deal. If you're not yet an Audible member, I want you to go to audible.com/MacBreak. And you can join Audible right now, and you could pick a free book. a credit towards almost anything they've got in the Audible stores. There's so many great books for some summertime reading, maybe a mystery, a thriller. I like to read history, comedy. There's a huge amount of wonderful, wonderful stuff to choose from, and they've really improved the sci-fi section. They are working hard. In fact, I think it's their goal, ultimately. I know this is their kind of their mandate, to get every book ever written on Audible.com. That may not happen in my lifetime, but they're working on it. If you're not yet a member, just visit audible.com/MacBreak and join today. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Let's see. Is there any big Apple news we can get to before we get to our picks? I'll tell you what, while I'm looking, let me thank you, Nicholas, and let you get back to work, because we were only supposed to take 20 minutes of your time and we've taken an hour. No, I really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you all.
Thank you so much for Quicksilver. Anything you want to plug that's coming up? MacFuse, which you've worked on, is really cool. Allows you to use any plug in any file system into the Macintosh. That's neat. Are you excited about XFS? You think that's going to be an important? That's part of Snow Leopard, I gather.
ZFS or XFS?
ZFS. I'm sorry. I get my
vaguely excited. I like the idea of not having data corrupted as often as it does.
But yeah. Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. Nicholas, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
Nicholas Jitkoff.
Good to talk to y'all.
Alcor, fresh from his hyperbaric chamber, the webbed one. We appreciate your time. Take care.
See you later.
See ya. He's so cute. He came by one of our broadcasts from, you remember that, from the Apple store.
Mm-hmm.
And my main reaction was, are you 12?
And like, you're like, oh, when I first met him, I don't know. It's so funny. You get these ideas in your head of what people look like. Like, I always assumed John Gruber would look pretty much like Wallace Shawn.
Yes, me too. Because he's kind of kvetchy. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. He just seems like he'd be terminally annoyed and correcting people.
Yeah.
And I do not think it means what you think it is.
And that's how he talks, is what's funny. Especially when he's had a couple of drinks. That's how he sounds. But with him, I was like, why is this devastatingly good-looking young man staring at me at the Moscone?
Exactly.
And he's like,
exactly.
He's really good-looking. And yeah. I was like, wow, so surprised.
He's good-looking, cute.
Smart as
nails, yep.
Do you want me to pass him a note at gym class and see if he really likes you?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Okay. Conversation's taking a bit of a turn. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but send him a radio button, like just Y or N.
Is that what they do? Is that what the kids do now?
You write a Rails program. Yeah. And you can get it across before it crashes, you can tell whether you love somebody.
You know, I bet you there are, if there were any, well, maybe not. I'm just wondering, maybe there are kids doing that, you know?
People are turning books into iPhone apps at this point. So, like, there's so much, and we should return to this at some point, because the stupidity has not gone away on the App Store. There continues to be a triple A, you know, space A tip calculator, you know, showing up there.
Why is Apple allowing that and not getting updates in a timely fashion?
So you can't talk about your product and how it's developed, but, like, some guy can come up and have a tip calculator that...
It drives me crazy.
Yeah, those are different decisions, but some of the things that Apple does can be very hard to understand.
Please, Apple, just open up the apps. Your apps will be better. Everybody will be happier. This penchant for secrecy can go too far, and I think it really has in this case. Who is it that says the effing NDA?
Craig Hockenberry, the guy who does Twitterific.
Right. Yeah.
If you spell out that particular gerund and that particular acronym, .com, you'll find a stream that pulls out all the Twitters that people have to say things about the effing NDA.
Is it effing or is it the full adult version?
No, it's the full gerund. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I see it. Oh, this is a great site. Effing NDA! Oh, that's so funny. Oh, that's so funny. It does... It does make you wonder what is, as Scott Bourne said, what is the business case for this? And I just think it's corporate, I don't know, some sort of weird corporate situation. Let's get to, we want to wrap it up anyway, and there isn't a whole lot of Mac news. I think it was just great to have on our 100th episode, have Alcor. Although I'm a little disheartened that so few of you actually use Quicksilver, it may be that maybe that it's just you and me, Merlin, that really care.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of it, though. You know, this is why we use Macs, and this is why we beat the Germans, because we want to have a system where everybody gets to use the thing that makes sense to them. I'm forever being challenged by people who are like, tell me why I should use OmniFocus. And I'm like, you shouldn't. Like, that's so weird. That's like me trying to sell you on, like, moving to mustard. It's like, why do I care? Like, if that works, something
right,
works for you.
Right.
Like, don't be such a complete, like, sociopathic nerd that you think every decision, like, has to, you know, you've got to talk somebody into being who you are. That's why the Mac is great. An endless number of options for basically doing incredibly powerful things in any way that makes sense to us.
Hey, let's talk about... Go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, I mean, sometimes you meet somebody whose opinion you respect so much that you have, when they disagree with you so completely on something, you have to have the humility to take half a step back and think, maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to evaluate that. There are a couple of movie critics like that, where if they just loved a movie that I just hated, I got to think, okay, maybe it wasn't a whirling vortex of purple suck. Maybe it was just a point of view problem.
Oh my God, Andy, you're not going to believe this. I have completely changed my mind. You're right. I have been reading and respecting. I have been reading and respecting your work for so many years that you literally had to say that one thing to change my mind. I could not be any more in agreement than I am at this moment.
Well, I was now you're making me feel this is going to turn into the Sammy Maudlin show, because that was a lead up into saying that's why I keep trying to figure out what it is, how to make OmniFocus work, because you're. Because you're a smart guy, when you write stuff, I actually understand the word treatments you use. And so every time I launch OmniFocus and I say, okay, create task, tag it with writing. Okay, please find every task that's associated with writing. No tasks. Okay, I must be stupid, because clearly this is supposed to, you know.
You have to understand, Andy, this is written by people who use Emacs. I mean, they're used to playing the piano for things to happen on their computer.
As late as macOS 10.3, I was still using Pine and Elm for like most of my internet use. So
that doesn't surprise me a bit. I've thought about it. I've thought about going to Mutt, you know.
So let me ask you about your Apple Core experience, because you installed the new Apple Core. What is it? The ATV. And I have to say, yep. By the way, the Apple TV 2.1 software that lets you use the iPhone as a remote is the single most exciting invention since the atom bomb.
You have to wonder if that's one of those things, like, what is that story? There's that story about the graphing calculator, that famous story about how tenacity and subterfuge.
The kid who worked at Apple for a year without really working there
and, yeah, like, got a graphing calculator into the OS. Yeah. You got to think, like, I wonder how that slipped in and whether people realized what a game changer that was, given how unbelievably execrable it is to try and type on the Apple TV.
Unbelievable. This thing... So what happens is your remote, you know, this, which everybody loves, and it's like the number one or two iPhone app, this remote that lets you control iTunes, also now lets you control your Apple TV. So you see your Apple TV, but you also see on the iPhone, you could browse all your content on the Apple TV, including any iTunes it's connected to, start it, stop it, fast forward through it, all with this. I mean, it suddenly makes it like a Harmony One remote.
And when you go to YouTube to do a search, or you go to .mac, something where you have to put in your password, as soon as a text field pops up on Apple TV, it also pops up on your phone.
Oh, that's cool.
And you type using the Apple keyboard.
Oh, that's a big improvement.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. This is unbelievably useful.
You imagine that there's going to be a wing of the App Store for Apple TV. Wouldn't that be a total game changer for that device?
Oh, no kidding.
I wonder, there's a part of me, it's so funny. I never try to overstate like how much my opinions agree with the rest of the world. And that's never clearer than with the Apple TV. Cause people like friends of mine, like this, we love the Apple TV so much, especially the hacked Apple TV, to be honest. But there's a part of me that keeps thinking, I wonder if this can become some kind of, if they're not really going to put the resources into this to really pump it out there, I wonder if this could become like the total developer's hack-on box, like really cut the price and really get a little bit flimsy with the security and not even security, but I mean, I'm running a Drobo off of my Apple TV now.
Yeah, well, now that's what I want to talk about. So you have the Apple Core ATV, the new one, 3.2 just came out. Now,
3.2.1 is the
one you need to have If you're using 2.1 for the Apple.
3.2.2 is the new one, and 3.2.1 fixes a really annoying problem with Sapphire. Okay.
Because no, I can't get Neato TV to work because I updated to 2.1 in the Apple software.
Yes. So what happened was this is again, and if you're doing anything with the Apple Core, Apple TV stick, you're on pretty thin hacker ice. Like this, it looks like this is all going to be seamless, but it's still, you know, it's a little bit out there what we're doing here. So things will break. But what happens is you buy this program, which you, by the way, can just download for free yourself from Aqua TV.
It's patch stick.
Yeah. Yeah. But what this guy's done, which I think is kind of cool, is he's taken this stuff and basically made it into an installer with a wizard. So you create on a USB drive, you create the ability to install these hacks in about 30 seconds.
It's so easy and well worth doing it. The negative is you have to back up your Apple TV to the beginning days. So you have to,
you have to do a full restore.
And so that takes a little while and you're going to lose everything you've got on there. And then
you have to
update to the latest version. But once you've done that, it's very simple.
A couple things in this latest update were just mind-blowing for me. So in a nutshell, what it does is there's been this project called Aqua TV. I think you can consider it a project. And it's a whole bunch of different add-ons for the Apple TV that takes this open source functionality and throws it on the Apple TV to let you do stuff the Apple TV won't let you do. Okay, now some of it to me is not useful. Some of it is order Papa John's pizza over your Apple TV, and I have not done that.
They now have Domino's too, so it's two kinds of crappy pizza you don't want.
Oh, sweet. You can surf the web. You can surf the web from your Apple TV.
Don't want to do that.
Of course, this is modal, so you would have to stop your movie to go over to surf the web and go to Wikipedia. Right. Those things aren't as useful to me.
No.
A couple things that are amazing is, first of all, this it basically installs a little mini version of OS X. So you've got, that is to say, you know, a more standard thinking version where you have a user called Front Row. And the user called Front Row has a movies folder and has a music folder and so on and so on, with a lot of the core OS X functionality right there. And so you have the ability to go in there, and up till now it's been pretty cool. You could SSH in without any, you know, hardware hacking and just drop stuff into this folder. And then you get stuff like automatic IMDb lookup, you know, sort of like the way CDB does for your music. This does this for your movies, include posters. And it's hypothetically, let's say you have an AVI of your cat playing that's in two parts. You can select those to be concatenated. And it'll automatically join them together for you. But the game changer is what they've added in this new edition. Is it okay to rant about this a little bit, Leo?
No, I think this is very exciting. I think, I'm installing. I am totally. I saw your tweet saying you were able to connect your Drobo to the Apple TV.
I ended up writing a post on it. There's three things about this that are pretty amazing. The first is that, first of all, it now has a GUI installer. You don't have to get in the terminal and get your hands dirty.
Right.
This you basically take any USB stick.
Any 1 gig or less USB.
1 gig or smaller. That's important because it tends to fail at higher sizes. And this has a little kind of clunky looking wizard, but it installs it for you in, you know, a minute or two.
Very easy.
That's so great. So you don't have to be a hacker. Second huge change, you don't have to SSH in anymore. You can now do vanilla FTP, which means you could create, you know, a new favorite, in my case, in Transmit.
That's what I did.
And I can just drag stuff. I have automator actions now where I can drag stuff onto a folder and automatically gets uploaded to the movies folder. This is huge. It's so easy to use. It's much more Mac-like than the Mac version of this in some ways. And then finally, it's added USB drive support.
That's in Neato TV, and that's the thing.
It's Neato TV. Yeah, and so you need to go in and make sure you get up to date because basically Leopard, there was some Leopard stuff that broke.
Right.
Last one. But long story short, I've got 3 terabytes hanging off my Apple TV now.
Well, what I want to do is I have a little portable drive that I bring to work. I download stuff or whatever, put it on there. I'd like to have it, you know, like a little shuttle drive, and then I connect it to the Apple TV. It's 320 gigs. That's a lot. That's plenty. Yeah. That's hundreds of hours of stuff. And I no longer have to FTP. I no longer have to, you know, go through and rename stuff. It's just there. It shows up and I could play it. I mean, this is huge. This is revolutionary. And now I can browse it with my iPhone.
That's right. And you can also do stuff like install Parian. If you don't want to use Sapphire, which I like, you could go jump over and use MPlayer. You can pretty much install any kind of OS X. I think I might be talking on my butt, but I think basically you drop anything into the documents folder that has an installer on a DMG. You say smart update, click, and it installs whatever's on those DMGs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's pretty powerful. Now, what I have not figured out to do, that's my next thing to figure out, is how to make the Drobo network accessible from from FTP. So in other words, I imagine I could, with somebody who is smarter than me, could just SSH in and, you know, change a file somewhere to make that assign an IP address or something. But right now I can only upload into that movies folder. The mounted drive for me is not showing up as a...
I was hoping it would show up. Okay.
Well, I wonder if you can. It would not surprise me if that was
so
next.
You still have to copy files over. You can't just put a drive on there and play what's on the drive.
You could SSH or FTP, I guess more likely SSH in, but whatever, FTP in and do it manually, yeah.
Oh, see, that's disappointing. I want to be able to play directly off that external drive.
Well, yeah, you still can't play off there. What I did was I moved... No, absolutely. First thing I did was take all of my cumulative movies, throw them on the Drobo, then hook it up, and it's right there. It just mounts.
Oh, okay.
And so right under Sapphire, it says, identify this as a collection. And then it surfs it in one movie, one TV show at a time. By TV show, I mean films of my cat. It will go and look all that information up for you.
That's the beauty of it. And it knows, you know, I used to go through and rename stuff. It knows this is a series. This all goes together. I mean, it's really neat.
It's like $50. If you're, and of course, you know, the sneering Emacs people will point out that you could just go to Awkward TV and do all this yourself. But you could also line your own breaks and make your own ketchup. This is it's a nice thing. And it's $50.
I'm going to make that your pick.
That's my pick. I think that's my pick. Good night, everybody.
It's my pick, too. I'm just really excited. Andy, do you have a pick of the week?
Yes. This is based on the fact that for the past 73, 78 weeks, we've been complaining about how Back to My Mac is a wonderful screencast demo. The 10 points out of 10 to Apple for creating a really wonderful page on a website that demonstrates how this feature should work, ideally. Yeah. But this idea of being anywhere in the world and being able to access our Mac, regardless of whether we have a virtual private network or whatever up or not, doesn't actually so much work so much as it fails.
Yeah.
So I've been playing around with a utility called FarFinder that is not exactly Back to My Mac. Back to My Mac is wonderful because you can actually turn any iMac or any Mac you're in front of into your own home Mac. You can get screen share, you can get everything. But when I think that what I really want to do is I want to be able to get at a file that I may have left behind or copy something from my remote hard drive to my local hard drive, little stuff like that. FarFinder is a third-party utility. It costs $35. It is a web-based interface to the contents of your Mac. Once you set up the client, the host application on your home Mac, and it's not difficult to do, then you simply have a custom URL that always points back to that specific Macintosh. So from any Mac, any PC, any Unix machine, you can then simply bring up this URL, log in, and then get your entire file system. They also have an iPhone interface. So again, if you need to view a Word file, you can just simply, you know, go back to, you know, launch a FarFinder, go back, and then navigate, drill down to the documents folder, find what you want and read it. It has some really cool little tweaks to it. Like you can't do simple things like drag a file from out of the FarFinder window into the Finder window you're in front of right now. But you can do things like especially if you're on the iPhone, click on a file. Like if my editor never got something that I emailed her this morning, or if I was supposed to send it to her personal address instead of her business address, now that's absolutely not a problem. I can just, again, navigate to that document, click on it, and then just simply directly from the web interface say, please email this file to this person. And it just gets transmitted and emailed. But that's only about 60% of why it's so cool. The other 40% is that it does things that Apple should have hardwired into Back to My Mac. If you can't get it up and running on the first click, it really does walk you through what the problem might be and gives you suggestions on what you should start trying. And then it's almost practically asks you questions like, okay, once you click when you've done that, click this button and I'll see if that fixed it. Nope, that didn't try it. So why don't you go back into System Preferences, go into Security, because obviously it's not doing something very simple. It's not obviously not doing something as safe as not letting people access your Mac remotely. So there needs to be a certain amount of caution. You have to drill holes in your firewall to make sure that this works properly. Make sure that FarFinder has the ability to access that thing remotely. But once you get the key is, though, I've been using it for the past couple of weeks. Once you get it up and running, it runs, meaning you can go to that business trip. You can go for a month to the Far East. if it's running by the time when you leave for the airport, so long as your Mac doesn't go to sleep, so long as no one steals it, so long as the cat doesn't barf on the keyboard and cause a short circuit, it will continue to work. It's not this thing where, you know, you've got to set, we're back to my Mac, where you get it set up just fine. You think you're okay until 3 days, you know, you get to the hotel just screwing around. You think, oh, I want to get a copy of that comic strip I downloaded. And of course, you can get the comic strip. But 3 days later, when, oh my God, thank God, I've got a backup copy of the presentation back home. When it's your butt on the line, of course, that's when back to my Mac doesn't work. So anyway, $35, not the cheapest piece of shareware, but it works fine. And for a lot of people, it's going to be what they were hoping back to my Mac was from day one.
Hey, if it works, that's all I care about. Man, why isn't Apple getting that working? I don't understand.
It's so bad that it almost feels like you would just forget about it and it would just become a security hole before it would.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like something where you go, hey, there's this new thing where I can make money by taking my door off the hinges.
Well, it doesn't work.
I'm not going to make any money, but I think I'll just leave my door off the hinges.
Just see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. All right. That's a good recommendation. Thank you. I'm going to make a note of that and give that a try. I am still playing with iPhone apps, and you know, it's been a little disappointing because while the store opened with 600 apps, it seems like only 4 new ones. They don't seem like a whole lot of new ones all the time. I wish there were more new ones, but I have to say there have been some kind of surprises as I've browsed through some of these applications. Well, for one thing, you know, there's almost 400 games in there now, and there's some really fun, interesting games. I found one called Subway Shuffle that is just so much fun. It's a puzzle game, but the one I'm going to recommend is called Save Benji's. Have you guys seen this?
Yes.
I'm really happy with this. This is kind of what Alex was talking about. We really wanted a program that you could go up to a barcode, snap a picture of it, and then have it search the databases for prices. It's not quite as easy as that. I wish it were doing that. It doesn't, you can't yet enter in or take a picture of a barcode, but you can enter in the barcode number or the manufacturer or the product name or product number and do searches in your iPhone for other places that offer this and prices. So I just did a search for a Nikon, let's say the Nikon D300. Let's see what prices. It includes eBay, but also many other stores, and it sorts it by price, so you could find the lowest price. So when you're in a store and you say, you know, I want to buy this, is this ballpark to what I might find on the internet? You can get that information right on your phone. I think this is a very cool application. I really like it.
That's just another articulation of how your life is vastly improved when you have an iPhone in your pocket. Because, I mean, I go to the MIT flea market all the time, and I'll see something I have never seen before in my life, and I'm willing to hand over whatever it costs to own it, to make it part of my family, to make it part of my future. But, of course, you know, you don't have the ability to say, you know what, that's like a 10-year-old spectrum analyzer. You can buy it on eBay for $8 instead of, say, $85, Andy.
Exactly. So I'm really excited. That's the whole idea, the promise of having a portable computer that happens to have a phone. In your pocket. Yeah. Of course, this would work on an iPod Touch as well. I think a lot of people with touches are going to get a lot of the benefits of these.
How long do you think it's going to be before you'll see those little signs at grocery stores saying no iPhones allowed in the store? or just a sign saying automatically, anybody who brings in an iPhone pays double automatically.
Well, they already have the signs that say, for better service, get the hell off your phone. But now they have another reason to do that. That's a really great application. I mentioned earlier iWant, which is very simple, free. By the way, Save Benji's is free, as you would expect for a program that's trying to save you money. iWant is also free. Very simple. Just puts up on the screen 12 icons for bars, restaurants, coffee, shopping, movies. You just press the icon, and it knows where you are and immediately finds that category. For movies, gives you the movie times. It's a very simple, it's not an elaborate program. But another great free program. I'm just seeing so many wonderful applications here, and a lot of them are free. Oh, and we got to mention, since we talked about 1Password, 1Password now has an iPhone app. Have you seen that? It syncs automatically with your iPhone.
Mm.
And that's
you don't have to hit the sync button manually. You mean?
No, it's not syncing to your Safari anymore. It's an iPhone app for 1Password.
Oh.
Run, do not walk. to the App Store and download it. It syncs up via Wi-Fi to your database. Your 1Password database is now on your phone. Free.
I think we're very close to starting a brand new iPhone App Store drinking game where every time you see an application that does not require some sort of online sign-up component, that's when you drink.
Well, in this case, you don't have to sign up for anything. It's free. If you just want to use it password protected to store notes, you could. But if you're a 1Password owner, it syncs up to your Mac, and now your database is on there. And that is fantastic. Have all your passwords, all your information there. It's fantastic. Makes 1Password really a useful application. We're out of time, guys. It was so great to have Alcor on with us, Nicholas Jitkoff. I'm sorry we lost in the process.
this is like one of those monster movies where just, you know the two people being paid the most are going to survive to the end, like the cute guy and the cute girl, but the weird-looking tech guy, he's gone. Yeah. The night watchman, he's gone.
Yeah. The guy in the red shirt, gone. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, guy having intercourse behind the cabin, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone first. Because these are always morality plays, so that, the more they're having fun, the more likely they're going to get off.
That means one of us is probably, is actually the murderer who's been blaming it on the monster in the wood.
Scott Bourne, we'll never forget him. Alex Lindsay, he gave his all in the service of Mac Break Weekly, our 100th episode. They dropped off in Skype, and we weren't able to get him back. Skype was just not giving us a good day today, but fortunately we managed to muddle our way through a show.
We're playing the game on expert level where, it's more difficult to get to the end of the stage.
I wonder, I should try to get Alex back on before we wrap up, because this really, the idea for doing this show was Alex Lindsay's, and we are here at our 100th episode. Alex was the guy who came up with the video show Mac Break, came up with the name for it. And somewhat later, not much later, maybe a month or two later, said, hey, we ought to really do a podcast, an audio version of this. And it was a joint venture of Pixel Core and Twit for a while. And finally, at some point, I think we just said, I'll take over the audio. You continue to do the video. And it's stayed that way ever since. And I credit to Alex Lindsay. This show wouldn't exist had he not started Mac Break Video and then said, let's do audio. Are you there? Are you there, Alex? No, can't get him. Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
I are still there.
Good, because if you're gone, then I'm the murderer. I don't want to be the murderer. Thank you, everybody, for 100 great episodes, and here's to 100 more. Another Mac Break is broke.